Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Experience. I am your host, Jeremy Vaney, and this ends our weekly show and begins our monthly show all in one. It's a transitional episode. Must be the trickster. So I am having a roundtable as planned with Crystal, our returning champion.
Hello.
Christopher Rosing.
Hi.
Bob, a.k.a. Bob from New Jersey.
Hello.
And Jeannot.
Hi, everybody.
They've all been on the show before, so hopefully you remember them. If not, we will get reacquainted. I have absolutely nothing in mind for this roundtable. I've never done a roundtable with nothing in mind before, so we're just going to wing it. But before we wing it, I do want to ask Crystal, and maybe this is the lead-in to winging it, I guess. But it had come up on the message board, and you answered it in text, but maybe we could just flesh out the experience that you talked about where seemingly a woman with a dog-like creature with a cat face approached you and started talking to you in a park. People seemed confused, or a couple of people seemed confused by your reaction to that, and it might have been because we didn't actually flesh out the entire thing. The setup is that this woman who seems hyper real, or I would say high strangeness strange, let's just say, with this creature, with this animal, starts asking you at high speed about your life, and you don't, it seems as though you didn't ask her really anything about hers. Is that true? And if so, would you attribute that to it being part of the high strangeness?
Yes, that is true. Another thing was I had no reason at that moment to really believe that she was anything other than a person like any other person with a dog. But I was noticing things that were different about her because I didn't have these experiences until this summer. And so I was very new to all of this.
Okay. And then the other question was, how did they disappear? And it sounds like they had an argument about people seeing them. Is that right?
Yes, because Godly, the dog, was Godly. Pinky is the lady, and it was like a snout, like a pig-like snout, not a cat-like. But the dog, Godly, was like the perfect of all breeds and also kind of like a cat, which are two animals that we've had, you know, in my life and have connected with a lot. And so after Godly was in front of me and I was petting Godly, and it was so enthralling because it was so amazing the way that he felt and the energy that I felt from him. And Pinky just seemed so excited that Godly was with me. And, you know, she's like, he's going to love you. And that it was love is what I felt. And he kind of sat there for the length of time that it lasted for it to have that connection, that little bit of petting. And then I stopped petting, and he turned and looked at me and then went over to her and started jumping up and down, kind of like really high, almost springing into the air, not really just a jump, but a real true spring so that his feet were off the ground and he was coming to her eye level. And he would, when he got up to her eye level, he would bark at her. And up to this point, he had been completely quiet. He hadn't barked or anything. He was just silent. And so he would get up and he was barking at her kind of excitedly. And she was like, stop, get down. And I know people talk to their dogs all the time and their animals. I have pets, and we have lots of pets in this house, actually. And I do talk to my pets and they talk back sometimes, but, you know, in their pet language, whatever it is. But it was a little different. It was, I just felt as though they were really like there was more being communicated than I was picking up on. And that she was saying to him, you know, just they are going to hear you. You need to stop. Shh, shh. They're going to hear you. They are going to hear you. And I thought, okay. And they walked around the corner and it was silent, instantly silent, nothing. And I said, that was really weird. So I got up and I looked and they were just gone. And there was nobody else around. It was around, it was early in the morning, 6-ish, maybe 6:30 by that time. And they did just disappear. And that's when I realized that wasn't a normal encounter. They came up on me really fast. She came right to me. There was no hesitation, asked me a bunch of questions. I interacted with the dog, found out their names. And then there was this like bickery back and forth about someone, people were going to hear them or somebody was going to hear them. And then boom, they were just gone. And that's where I felt like when I shared it with my brother, then wow, that maybe this was a visitor or they were visitors and I don't know where from, but it was definitely the first of that.
Whoever is typing, by the way, we hear all of it. So if you can quietly type, that'd be great. You know, as I'm listening to you, I'm realizing that maybe the theme of this show isn't really about the topic so much as the interconnection, in that I think you've spoken now on the phone with Christopher, and yeah. I know Jeannot had mentioned something about Bob from New Jersey wanting to talk to him. So here we all are. Maybe that's sort of the theme of this. And so I would love for you guys to talk amongst yourselves if you have questions for each other or for me. But I do have one more question for Crystal, which is when you saw the blue light that wasn't, it turned out to be almost like a portal, and then you saw a creature with scales through there, and you sort of said, I know I initiated this contact or I came up and was friendly, but I gotta go. Under the hopes that that this would continue to unfold, did you ever see anything with scales after that?
No, that was the only one that I saw with scales. And then that would be the second instance of a situation and after the Pinky and Godly. And so, yeah, no, that was very, it was intriguing and interesting, but I haven't seen anything like that since.
Okay. And maybe that isn't typing. Maybe someone's just jiggling their microphone. I don't know, but I guess we'll just deal with it.
Hey, Jeremy, could I ask Crystal a question?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, we're at a table here.
This is Bob.
This is Bob.
Okay.
In the show, I happened to listen to this one. You had said that Pinky, I guess, was sort of chatting you up like child in a childlike way.
Yes.
And it sounded like superficial questions. I was wondering if she had asked anything, you know, that got deeper, that made you feel like this was something about you on a deeper level.
It wasn't her. Her questions didn't make me feel that. It was more the way she looked at me and the energy that I felt between us. And there was this that was deeper because I didn't. I felt like even, you know, because she was asking me, where do you live? Things that that kids won't hesitate to ask, but that adults usually do. And the feeling was more what was deeper than the actual questions that she was asking.
Okay. One of the reasons I'm asking is because the only other similar case that I know of in my personal experience, I didn't experience it, but I had a friend who did. And he was on the beach and tripping, as it turns out. And we've talked about hallucinogens on the show. And a young girl walked up to him and just started talking to him like in a very mature way and almost like questioning him like a Greek muse, like very deep things and about his life. And, you know, it's the only similar thing I could think of, but it seems like a little reverse here, like the adult came up and started acting
right,
sort of childlike.
Yeah, exactly what I was thinking as you said it. I'm like, well, it was the exact opposite.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
We'll be back after this. Aloha, Jeremy Vaney here, and I want to tell you about my latest undertaking, OurUndoing.com. OurUndoing.com is a multimedia website where if you watch, if you read, if you listen, without trying to absorb knowledge like we do with normal learning, and without the normal judgmental filters that we use to compare and contrast so-called spiritual knowledge, if we watch, if we read, if we listen without all of that, we may just wake up to our full human nature. That is what this website is for. It's not about what we're doing, it's about who we are, truly are, when we're off the pendulum of duality. If your life is about seeking truth above all else, look no further. Join me at OurUndoing.com.
Whitley Strieber has published an incredible 2-volume historical novel called In Hitler's House under his open pseudonym Jonathan Lane. This amazing story follows the life of William Weber, who meets Hitler while touring Germany in 1931 and becomes his friend and confidant, but then, when he realizes the truth, becomes a spy in Hitler's house for the Allies. Living a life of terrible danger, he falls in love with another of Hitler's secret friends, also a spy in his house. This is a story of espionage and desperate love, and the deepest portrait of Adolf Hitler ever created. Don't miss In Hitler's House, available in paperback and as an ebook on Amazon.
Welcome back.
Janelle, you, what is your situation in terms of your high strangeness experiences? Because it seems, just from private email exchanges, that you're still trying to figure out, I'm not sure whether you're an experiencer or in what way you're an experiencer. Is one of those correct?
It's more of a, in what way. I have a lot of, like, you know, high strangeness events in my life, you know, that resolve around psychic experiences and precognitive experiences and just odd, strange synchronicities and just weird stuff, you know. I do have some UFO experiences, and I have strange scars that, you know, I had no appear overnight, you know. But I don't, boy, it's so hard. It sounds ridiculous when, you know, I go through everything that I've talked to you about prior, and it seems pretty obvious that I'm having some type of visitor experience, but absent seeing a being of any kind, I still have that question as if that's really happening or not.
Hmm. See, I almost think that that's an enviable position, because you don't have a definition, and so you can engage mystery as a real open question. But I know it sucks to go through, so my condolences.
Yeah.
I can
tell you there's an experience I had that it's kind of like a duh, you dummy. Of course you are having these experiences, you know, because of the nature of it. But one of my last interviews I did with you, one of the commenters and on the thread was Good Cop, Bad Cop. He was talking about, he was on a train listening to the show that you and I had done. And he looked out the window, and the clouds formed into the shape of the lady on the face of communion, right? And shortly after that, we had talked about an experience I had just before I received an email from you. I went to the same spot in the yard where that happened, and I looked up in the same area of the sky. It was cloudy at that time. And I looked up, and just as I looked up, these dark clouds moved in and formed the face of the cover of communion. I mean, perfectly. It was like, oh my God, are you serious? I'm looking at this thing. It only lasted for like half a second or something, but it was clear as can be. It was perfect. It's kind of like, duh, yeah, you're having these experiences, but still without that confirmation, I guess, still leaving it in question.
You know, that might be an interesting, and maybe I'll just throw it out to all of you, but an interesting show topic is confirmation written in the clouds, because I've heard this from a number of people where they have a question. I mean, literally, Jeff Ritzman talked about when he was in Gulf Breeze during the Gulf Breeze flap, and he had this UFO sighting, but he wasn't supposed to be in Gulf Breeze at that time, and he had this footage. I think this was basically it, and so if he was going to expose this footage, he would expose the fact that he was where he wasn't supposed to be. And when he stepped outside of a diner, there was a giant question mark formed in clouds as he was thinking about this, as if to say, so what are you going to do? You know, like, things like that are
right.
Pretty amazing. Have any of you had anything like that where you look up and literally the cloud formation seems to be speaking to you?
I did this weekend.
Huh. Do tell.
And it's connected to the themes here that we're talking about. My mother-in-law passed, and so we went to her memorial. And afterwards, we went for a walk, my husband and I. And it's in Napa, and the house at his brother's house. And so this house is located with water, bodies of water on either side, basically the bay and like marshlands and things like that. And so we went for a walk right at sunset. And as the sun was setting, the clouds formed what seemed to be like a funnel. And I said, this looks like a funnel, like it's going to take us, like we're going to go right into another world if we just followed into that funnel that was formed in the sky. And he saw it as well. And it was this perfect, like, you might, like, I don't know, a hole or something that was going to suck us in. The way it was, the shading and the lighting and the way the clouds all came together. And it did make me feel like it was an entrance into another dimension and the themes. And maybe that's my interpretation from all the stuff I'm thinking about lately. But that's what I saw in the clouds.
Okay. And, Janelle, am I wrong in that you wanted to talk to Bob from New Jersey, or you thought he wanted to talk to you or something? You'd think I would write these things down and do a little more show prep, but, I'm bad at my job.
Well, so. Hey, Jeremy, you're supposed to be a professional here.
That's right.
No, I'd noticed that he'd said that he'd be interested in doing a round table, if I was on it. So I just brought that up.
Okay. Do you remember that, Bob?
No, but, that's one of those senior moments that I'm sure I'm going to enjoy anyway.
Well, let's see. Well, I think the line was, if I'm ever on a round table, hint, hint, Jeremy, hint, hint. I want him to be on.
Oh, I remember that. I remember that, yeah. And, I'm sure I just found your story interesting and, you're incredible. So that's probably why I wanted to be on with you.
Wow, what a love fest. This is amazing.
Yeah. Oh, man. we're tweeting behind your back right now, just exchanging little messages. Yeah, right.
Actually, me and my wife drove along half the East Coast a few months back, and we went through New Jersey. So I assume you're there since you're Bob.
You have credibility.
Right.
Well, Christopher, I don't know what you guys talked about, but I know that you and Crystal were able to speak, I think, last week or so. I'm just going to go out on a limb and assume that she talked about some of her experiences and bounced them off you. Now, you're an interesting cat because you've done work in the near-death realm. And you have a large body of knowledge sort of all over the place, really. Does what she's describing fit in with the work that you did with Kenneth Ring?
Yes, it does. Exactly. And that's when I heard her story on your podcast. I was like, holy cow, I've heard this many, many times before. Even though Crystal's experience when she had the back pain and the massage where she popped out of her body was not a result of being close to death, it had all the characteristics of a near-death experience. And in fact, there's a classification a subcategory of a near-death experience. So of women who have, during childbirth, through extreme pain, they have out-of-body experiences and different aspects of the near-death experience. So what she said really resonated with me. After talking with her the other day, all of her experiences and her childhood experiences that she had really fit that whole prototype, I guess you would say, of what a near-death experiencer is, even though she doesn't consider it a near-death experience, but all the aspects of it are there, and many people have had it too. One of the things I really like, interested in about that is the life reviews and previews, and what she described in being in bubbles, that is so characteristic. So many other people have report that, having that experience. And I had to reach out to her when I heard that podcast, for sure.
Well, as you're talking about the back pain, when I had my Kundalini awakening, or whatever that is, my back went out. So as this energy rises up from the spine, the back goes out. What is that? And is that, do you think, related even to what Janot is talking about in terms of finding marks on your body or something like that. Like, is that a bridge too far to say that those types of things are related because they're physical, or is there a link, do you think?
Well, I think there's definitely a link. I'm not so sure about the marks on the body, but the Kundalini energy, I mean, you know, Kundalini or prana or chi or lung and bon, you know, it describes something. So whenever you're talking about something, you're using words to describe something that you basically can't really talk about because it's like ineffable. But it describes the energy release in the body. During the research that Kenneth Ring had done, and then when I worked with them, all indicated that that same energy, whether you call it Kundalini, prana, chi, lung, could be the core mechanism at a near death. So that when you die, that energy is released. And there are certain characteristics of that energy that move in your body, hot heat in your body, lights under the skin, feeling different sensations in the body. And then also, like, I know this was on Whitley's show about the electromagnetism stuff, but that is a clear-cut characteristic that, people who experience these kind of energy awakenings affect electrical devices, the turning the street lamps on and off like Whitley describes, without trying. I mean, it just happens when they walk by, or burning out computers. Some of this stuff is interesting. I remember one situation where someone reported they had a near-death experience as a result of a suicide attempt, but before they even did the suicide attempt, they like blew out light bulbs in their house. I mean, they actually even exploded and stuff. So, I mean, the body being, has a lot of electromagnetism to it, all our nervous system, there's something going on there, and the Kundalini is definitely a part of it. So, I find it interesting, Jeremy, that you said you had back pain when you had your Kundalini awakening. So it seems like high stress moments, extreme pain, or even panic where someone thinks they're going to die, but they don't actually die, can be triggers to unleash this energy that seems to be dormant within us all.
Well, in my case, the energy, I would say, is what did it. I mean, really what happened was I'm sitting on the couch. I finally understand what I'm reading, Judy Krishnamurti. And in that moment, there is complete cessation of self. There is nothingness. And in that moment of nothingness, this energy rises. And in the process of rising or whatever, it's saying rising makes it sound like it takes a long time, but it's really all almost instantaneous. It blew out my... I think it was my L4 and L5, the two, on both sides of my back.
Causing me sciatica. Was the cause of your back pain.
Yeah.
Okay.
So interesting. I mean, it seems to be caused from pain, and it also seems to cause pain. it's interesting. And then you've got these alleged beings or whatever who are etching their mark into people or somehow leaving something in people. What is this? At the end of the day, outside of the causality portion of the program, could it be leaving an anchor in rational thought because we're rational people? And so we need that reminder that this stuff is real and not just a dream,
Well, the next day after the first massage where I had the out of body experience, I went back. And because she said, come back tomorrow because I still feel this big knot and I'm not going to charge you anymore for the massage. Just come back and we're going to continue. That day, and we were both a little nervous because she had never experienced having somebody leave their body and I had not done that either and we weren't sure what was going on. But as she was massaging that day, there came a point where all of a sudden I felt a jolt of electricity go run through my body and she jumped back and screamed because she said it went straight from my body up her arm and hit and into her heart, this jolt of electricity.
Wow. Wow.
So you're talking about the electric, putting things out into her. And since then, I think we haven't met.
What did you feel after that?
Say it again. Ask it again.
I said, what did you feel after the jolt?
Like physically?
Yeah, like did you feel like something had released, or did you go into a different state of mind, or?
Yeah, no, I felt like something had released, definitely. Like I still had pain. The pain didn't go away, but I felt, even before the jolt of electricity, I could feel, as she was massaging, I could feel the electricity moving through my body and, you know, exactly where it was going. And then, boom, I felt surprised, a little bit scared, actually. That's what we both felt. A little bit because I was worried that I didn't know if that could have hurt her. And I felt like I needed to understand, which is partly where the search began, maybe what was going on, because I didn't want to cause harm to her. And I felt like I need to understand more.
Let me throw this out there. I can't remember if I talked about this last week or not, but four quadrant logic. Is anyone familiar with that?
No.
Okay. No.
Perfect.
No.
So four quadrant logic. I mean, it's really simple. It's really just integral spirituality, putting words to things that we already do. But essentially, it says that like the Western mind or rational mind categorizes things as yes, no, both, or neither. That's how we break things up. But that indigenous people, and in dream time we do this, and children do this, they have all four of those going at once. Yes, no, both, neither. And I wonder if that is in fact, in some sense, a translogical, transcends and includes logic, a translogical mode of being. And that these beings speaking to us are speaking to us that way, which is why it comes through dreams. It comes, they come through physically. They come through in these weird, absurd ways. Like all of that is because they are on all four of those at once. So I just want to ask, does that sound right? Or does that sound like a cop out?
I would say yes. That, you know, when you're talking to that non-duality and something that this energy that's interacting with us, whether it's like an alien or during a near-death experience or like Pinky and Godly, that energy that's coming and interacting with us is beyond our conceptual mind. So it's a non-conceptual. So they're using symbology, and it can be all and of the above. And one of the things that comes to my mind is during like a life review and during a life preview, during a near-death experience, many people experience both from their point of view, another point of view, and then a global point of view. And that global point of view is everything around it and encompasses it outside of it. So, it makes sense to me.
Yeah, was someone else chiming in?
Yes, I was going to say that you're... four quadrants of logic actually describes a quantum state. So if these beings are operating, you know, on a fundamental level, they would have to operate on a quantum state. And so they can be all those things. That just seems...
Yeah. Well, and,
like
you know...
logical progression. Yeah.
You know, you have an indigenous background, correct?
Yes.
So does it sound racist to you? Because I've wondered this. To equate the mind of a child with the mind of indigenous people, because I get where they're going with that, except that all people become adults, and then they have real cultures, and they live in the world, and do so for thousands of years, you know? Like, so an adult indigenous person is not the same mind as a child. So I'm just wondering, is that like an accidental racism, or am I not getting it?
No, I would say that it's less about the people, and it would be more about the social evolution. So you can say the society is childlike rather than the people.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Okay. Yes. And then, Bob, I don't remember. You had a UFO sighting? I forgive me for not remembering.
You only interview like 50 people a year, so... I forgive you.
That's why I'm cutting back, so I can be better at roundtables.
Yeah. I've seen things that I think were UFOs. Nothing as dramatic as your kind of circus wheel in the sky.
Right.
I saw one over New York once. I've seen lights. Like I've twice seen kind of a star-like light descend completely vertically, like from top of the sky to the ground. But I've not seen, you know, I would love to, I think, I would love to have that experience.
You're saying in New York, were there multiple witnesses? Was it a mass sighting?
So we were in the car. I was with my parents in the car. And I'm trying to remember if there was something else there. I know that my dad also saw it. So the initial glimpse of it, you know, when you're coming near a toll plaza, and they often have those very tall light poles with maybe six lights around them.
Yes.
That was the first glimpse. I thought, huh, because obviously then it seemed more closer to the horizon. And so, but as we got closer and closer, I noticed it's actually up in the sky. And I think it was like an overcast night. And I pointed it out to my dad, and we were looking at it, and it really was moving extremely slowly and had, I think, seven lights that weren't in a perfect circle. It was sort of like, you know, the shape of the Superman shield? So it's sort of like a squished diamond, but not a diamond.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just slowly moving over the city. And it was back around the time when there were a lot of those triangle sightings, like in the that New York State area.
Right.
So, and I could not think of any other explanation for it, because it was clearly, it had no other lights. It was clearly not a helicopter or an airplane or a blimp. And it, you know, it looked like, I couldn't see a structure, but it had the lights. And then, another time, my husband and I saw a huge three-light triangle in the sky that faded.
Hmm.
But it looked like three, like, stars, like, you know, three Venuses, kind of. And we were like, as soon as we saw it, because we rounded, like, a tree line, we were both like, what's that? And then we just kept looking at it, and it just, like, faded. Like, all the lights faded at the same rate.
But you've never had any sort of being encounter or any, even like Jeannot is talking about, these sort of personal wink, wink, nudge, nudge things that sort of happen daily?
So I've had a couple of things I associate with beings. I have no conscious memory of seeing an alien, for lack of a better term. But I did have a time when I saw a hooded figure. So, you know, they're very clever, I think. My theory on it is the fact that we often have these things in the middle of the night, it leaves the room, one, for our own doubt, because we can say, huh, did I dream that? Was it real? And I think that's part of the why it happens usually during the night like that. And one of them that I had was, I kind of woke up and I was up in bed, sitting up, and I was looking across the room and I was like, is that a hooded figure? It was kind of like that scene in Communion, like, do I see something there?
Right.
And the next thing I remember was I was sitting on the end of the bed and it had come right up to me. And I was getting this, like, flood of symbols in my head, like, kind of like, I don't watch the show, but the show Stargate, where they've got that, like, big wheel of symbols and, you know, Egyptian-looking
okay.
iconography.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember that sort of, like, download. And it just had a brown cloak on, and that was the last thing I remembered of that one. And then I had one that was an audible experience. Like, I heard, I was awake definitely this time. And I suddenly got this, like, swooning feeling, like I was being sucked into something. And very confusing, but there's this really loud voice speaking in a way I've never heard any language like it. And I was just witnessing it in my head, like, what the hell? Like, how could anything talk that fast? What's going on? And then nothing. So a lot of these encounters, because I've had a bunch similar, they have a start that becomes like, that then goes black. And then there's like a period of blackness, and then I'll wake up or whatever.
Huh.
So it's the blackness thing that makes me think, especially that they're real, because not like, oh, well, you know, you wake up out of a dream. It's like something, there was a preface experience, something happened you can't remember, and then you're back to your awareness, like, wow, what just happened? And I never, except for one thing, I never have, like, any, like, dream recollection or, you know, suddenly a memory will occur. It's just, that's how it is.
We'll be back after this.
The new unknowncountry.com is on the way. There'll be exciting new graphics, much easier navigation, the ability to subscribe either with your credit card or using PayPal, the return of our free message board and subscriber chat room, and so much more. The new site will be intuitive and easy to use, but it will also be demonstrated and explained on Whitley's YouTube channel. As to when, well, we're hopefully just weeks away.
You know, The Afterlife Revolution is a funny book. It makes people happy, even though it's about the afterlife and thinking about crossing over. It made me happy to write it. And the reason it did was that I was actually in touch with Anne while I was writing it. And not only that, she proved it. She proved it clearly and completely. When you read the book, you'll see what I mean. You'll see why Dr. Gary Schwartz, who is one of the leading experts on the afterlife, considers it such an important book, why he wrote a foreword for it. Because this is about something real and incredible that we are told every day not to believe that we have souls and that we have an afterlife. Well, we do. We do. And the Afterlife Revolution is going to open the door for you, so you're not going to be thinking to yourself, maybe I don't, when you do. And that's why it's a book of joy. Go on Amazon, take a look at the great reviews, and get yourself a copy. It's available for your Kindle. It's available in paperback. And there's an audiobook read by me. And let me tell you something. You can hear something in my voice. People tell me that, and I think it's true. You know what it is? It's the inner joy that is part of me and has become part of me since this extraordinary thing happened. I have to say, Anne Streber was a remarkable person in this life, and she still is. Get it today.
Whitley Strieber's nonfiction is magical, powerful, and thought-provoking. From Communion to The Afterlife Revolution, there is no body of work like it in the world. Nothing even approaches it. And not only that, his wonderful fiction, from The Wolfen to his latest novel, New, offers reading and listening entertainment that you will never forget. And where do you find all this in one place? At Strieber.com. That's where. Every Whitley Strieber book available for sale is there. So don't wait. Go to Strieber.com and start exploring. There's only one Whitley and only one place to find all his work. Strieber.com.
Welcome back.
How weird is it that we consider these things to be aliens a lot, you know, or at least maybe we're coming out of that, I don't know, but the general thrust is alien, and yet people are describing things in cloaks, you know? Like, what is it with the hooded being? What is that about? I know...
Yeah, good question.
I mean, I'm reading When God Speaks by Tanya Lerman, who's an anthropologist, and, you know, this book is about evangelicals who talk to God and hear God, and how they train themselves to do that. But she just, in this chapter I'm reading now, has described an experience that happened to her when she was interviewing people doing work on the occult in the UK and wondering why people living in a rational world would want to do magic. And in the midst of her research, she had an experience where, you know, it sounds kind of high strangeness, looking out her, I guess, hotel window, I think it was. I don't remember what made her go to the window. I can't remember that part. But essentially, she saw small people in cloaks, you know, druids, she thought they were, coming into the streetlight and sort of staring up at her. But tiny people in cloaks. Now, she doesn't say alien. She thinks they were human. But what is that? Is there any precedence in history, any sort of unifying precedence? I mean, I know we hear about, again, aliens, we hear about druids, we hear about the wee people, the fairy folk, but is there anywhere, does anyone know, and I'm really thinking of Christopher here because I know that you're well studied in the Zen Buddhism stuff too, anything that talks about who these beings are and why they're wearing cloaks, why they present themselves as different things, is that even out there?
Well, I would comment on this in looking at it from a Buddhist point of view. Actually, I'm not Buddhist, but Bon, which is the indigenous tradition of Tibet, predates Buddhism. But when I hear stuff like this, I always look at it as the conditioning. Like, there's different conditioning. There's cultural conditioning. There's personal conditioning based on your actions and all your life experiences that lead you to your personality, your identity, who you identify with. And so when people see these energies that manifest to people appear in a way that the person relates to them because of either their cultural conditioning or their own personal conditioning, so that's how I view that. In this tradition that I'm in, it's like, we're really taught this is a dream. So this energy that we're in is variable, and malleable, and things aren't as solid as you think they are. People think, oh, this is a wall, this is solid, and so on. But the mind has everything to do with, the physical. And actually talking about that gets me back to something that I really was fascinated with in your interview with the hypnotist, which I think he kind of skirted over, but was to me way more interesting than, you know, whether you should use hypnotism for recall or not. And that's how, you know, these hypnotized subjects can affect their bodies. So, that's tremendous to me, the mind body connection. That that for sure demonstrates that the physical reality that is around us is affected by the mind.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I view it when you're talking about, so that, you know, we have these archetypes. You got fairies, aliens, angels, and how they appear to people, I believe, is either their cultural conditioning or their own personal conditioning based on their karma, you know, which is basically just actions, their whole life story, everything that happened to them and leads them to be predisposed to see who they are, whether they like Trump or they don't like Trump. You know, I mean, you know, they're good people, so whatever, you know, it's like, you know, there's things involved with that. So that's how I look upon that.
Well, I just think it's interesting that even though, like, yeah, our cultural conditioning may tell us alien or fairy, but we're still describing something that's not wearing a helmet the way we would think an alien might to breathe here, or describing something that's not necessarily even fairy-like anymore. But they're wearing cloaks with hoods. And I wonder what that does for us. Like, what is it about the cloak and the hood? Like, what sort of frame of mind does that put any of you in when you think about beings with cloaks and hoods? And is it even culture context sensitive? You know, like, some cultures wouldn't even wear a cloak and a hood. So why would they present themselves that way? Unless it's just the fashion from wherever they're from. I guess that there's the obvious.
Since I started that one, my impression at the time was it made it less threatening. Like, I don't know if that was the purpose, but for me, I felt like since I couldn't see the face, it felt less threatening.
Hmm.
And I'd have a big fear issue with the whole, you know, experience thing. I mean, that I try to get over, but it's like, it's so deeply fearful that that's how I interpreted why it was cloaked. Mm. Just, you know, maybe I was just reading into it. And I just want to say, I agree with the thing about how your mind makes interpretations, but I also feel there's an objective, to the extent there can be, there's an objective reality to the alien thing. I mean, on Unknown Country, there was just a new, like, what looked like gun camera footage. I mean, that's a craft. There seems to be, unless it's an illusion created for some purpose, I don't think it's just the projections of all of our minds. I think there are beings or something involved with craft, whether they're from here or elsewhere.
I would respond to that in a way that what I said was, I didn't mean that it's not an experience that's valid. It's just that it's not what we think it is, or what you think of it, like your car is a piece of metal. Yeah, and but it's solid and you think that's what it is, but it's really not, because at least that's my viewpoint on it.
Does it have objective, like, is it a material? Does it exist in space?
In my opinion, it's an awareness. It's what you are aware of. That's what I was thinking when you said the hooded figures, Jeremy, is that what if there were two witnesses there? One person sees hooded figures there, and another person sees maybe something else. I don't know if I can even.
No, that makes sense. I get what you're saying, but I also get Bob's point, because to Bob's point, well, that goes out the window once something is on film. And then, you know, we're all seeing it. It's something that can be captured on film. Therefore, it is what it is, right?
Well, there's a consensus reality here that is the combination of everybody. So you have individual realities, and then you have a consensus reality of which we're all a part of. So in my view, it's kind of like we're all little facets of a diamond, and we're all connected in the same thing, and we're all seeing the same thing, but we all have different filters on it. But then there's this consensus reality of which it manifests in a way that is common to all of us.
Well, see, this is what I found fascinating about Crystal's blue light, is that it kind of plays to that, which is, at first, it looks like a blue light in the woods, which, in fact, I've seen blue lights in the woods back in high school. There were two blue lights dancing in the woods. We stopped the car, we watched it, and then this what looked like an object sort of came over the car and stopped and hovered. And then maybe a year later, I saw those same two blue lights in a completely different location. And to me, in high school, I put all this stuff in the UFO alien box. But when Crystal talks about seeing a blue light and then going up to it and it almost looking more like a portal entrance or something, the closer you get to it, that really kind of throws a spin on it, doesn't it?
Right. And it came up to me. I didn't go up to it, but, and then started to like open up is how I felt then. But it touches on the idea, and I agree with things being presented to us both individually and in our society and culturally in a way that we're comfortable with it. Like that the contact is something that is desired on both ends, but also feared on both ends, which is maybe the cloak is also a protection of the being themselves, because until there's trust developed, you know, they're not so sure either whether they want to fully reveal themselves, which I think is what was happening with this orb, like a blue orb that started to open and become more than an orb. And I could see the scales. Mm-hmm. And, then the unicorn in my living room, like that's something that was very comfortable to me. Pinky and Godly were both very comfortable to me and not threatening in any way, because Pinky was just a very nice lady. But then I worked with kids for a long time and had a daycare. So I'm very comfortable with that sort of intellect and the way kids interact with the world. And then the dog, Godly, being like a mixture of a cat and a dog or something, that these were all things that I'm very comfortable with and not threatened by and didn't feel any fear. But when I think about the big concept about what else is out there, I do feel some fear.
Yeah, well, let me ask all of you, do you think that whatever is in your lives, And we'll just go down the list here, starting with Jeannot. Do you think that whatever is happening to you is for you? Because, I mean, just as an outsider looking in, it sounds like Crystal is sort of new to this, and she's open with it and kind of joyous about it. And so they're almost presenting her things like that. And Bob had talked about he had a fear, and so they presented in a certain way that would be less fearful, but it's certainly still not unicorns. You know what I mean? Like, it's not the most unfearful thing. It's still like a quote-unquote alien, but it's in a cloak. So that's still kind of, And then Jeannot isn't seeing beings at all, but is having all of these peripheral experiences that sort of suggest there is an invisible presence at the center of them that isn't him. Can you see how it would work that it's something about you that needs to interact with it the way it's presenting itself to you as individuals? I'll just ask that, and Jeannot, what do you think?
I think that it's obviously personal, because most of the things I've seen, I'm the only one who saw it, and nobody else experienced it. I mean, there's been a few instances where there have been other witnesses, but for the vast majority, it's just me experiencing it. So, I mean, I guess the question is it being presented to me in a way that I'm going to recognize it, or am I recognizing something that other people are missing? And likelihood is it's a little of both. So it's really a hard question to answer.
Okay. Crystal?
I do think that maybe it is a little bit of both, and different experiences are happening, and the experiences that I've had are definitely ones that, one, I can understand and am willing to understand, but also that that are being presented, like I said, in a way that I'm comfortable with. But I do believe that other people are having experiences that are very different than mine. And that's my answer.
Okay. Bob?
So I think it's personal, but it's also, I've always felt it was part of something larger. I mean, by nature, I mean, the one abduction experience that I had that was vivid, but was recalled later in a dream. I mean, when you're being like chased by a UFO to like beam you onto a ship, like how could that not be personal? Especially if it's in your own house and you're just not in a car that happens to be coming down the road when they're there. So I guess I've always felt that there's a link that is meaningful on a personal level. And I want to get back to the hypnotist thing at some point, but not necessarily now.
Okay. Sure, let's get Christopher's answer on that first.
Yeah, I'd go along with it being personal. In fact, I'd go along with it being very personal, in that, in my view, these experiences are really like the telephone ringing thing. Are you awake? Are you awake? You know, it's like these little darts coming at us to get us, shake us out of this being totally absorbed in our identities here on Earth. And it's designed, in my opinion, to crack that open, and to so that we are confronted with our true nature to try and understand who we are. And so in that way, it's totally personal. But in being totally personal, these experiences also have great meaning to other people. So that when we share them, not to everybody, but some people, it's just like when you share it to them, then it's like, oh, it's a little dart at them trying to open their eyes or their awareness to their true self. So it's both personal and for the collective that these experiences are happening, in my view.
Okay. Bob, what did you want to talk about hypnosis?
So before the hypnotist show, I was in the camp of that hypnosis has value for memory retrieval and shouldn't be just thrown away because there are false memories. But you changed my mind. And with that show.
Oh, I wish I had a sound effect for that. Like a cheering
kind
of thing.
Well, you can add it in later. That was a big change for me. And I also did some later research, like on the story. The key story was about the experiment where they would show pictures to people and insert a phony picture that was doctored, like them next to a hot air balloon ride, and that they would eventually, like a week later, like think they took a hot air balloon ride, like with vivid memories.
Right.
And it made me think, like, how applicable that is to things like all these things we're conditioned about, and especially religion. So it's like if you tell the same story enough times, it takes on a reality. So it's like even our own memories, like now it's not only do I not trust hypnosis, but it made me think a lot more about how the memories we think are, we can trust our waking memories, and I know what I saw and all that. You know, now all that goes out the window, too.
Well, how do you feel about that? Does it feel freeing or does it feel sad?
know? Well, I think I always thought that, you know, reality is a little, or our memory of things is kind of malleable. So I think what probably most of us, I don't know, I'll just speak for myself, that when we kind of grew up in the UFO world of like a Bud Hopkins and, you know, was it Leo Sprinkle, whatever, all these hypnosis stories, we were fed the idea that it's almost like a truth serum. Like when people are reliving things under hypnosis, it's more accurate than their own recall, that it's like, oh, this is exactly what happened. Right. And now we know that that's not true, but that was an important premise of buying the whole, you know, story of Betty and Barney Hill, who I still think, you know, something happened to them.
Yeah.
You know, the ones with Linda Cortile and all that, like Bud Hopkins people. So, you know, those were very influential on us. And now it's like, huh, well, obviously, like, none of that is good evidence. So is it freeing? I guess it doesn't bother me one way or another, but it did change my mind. It's not that I thought hypnosis was foolproof. It's that I thought it had value. And now, you know, that show basically changed my mind that it's like, well, you know, why even do it?
Right.
So if I had hypnosis, I think from where I come from, like if I had a memory, what seemed like a memory come back, I would not take it at face value. Like I would still question it.
Yeah. I think that's the real dilemma, I think, is for people who have had hypnosis and extensive hypnosis. It's like, you know, it's, I think it would be easier to just yell at me than have to look at that, because what do you do with that? Now, I mean, I guess personally I would find it freeing. I can see the other side of it, which is, I've wasted my life, but really, if there's something that is real about your experiences, well, that's regardless of hypnosis. So if you're really interested in the truth of what's going on in your own life, then, you know, why not embrace a start over, you know, like, okay, let's start from square one. What do we know? You know, what happened here? And what's still going on? And in fact, with the what's still going on, Jeannot, do you feel, and Chris, I'll ask this to both of you, do you feel like it is unfolding in your lives for a reason? Like, is it leading somewhere or no? And I ask this, you know, I just watched this, I watched three pieces of a docuseries called Hellier. I don't know if any of you have seen this, but it's a five-parter. Everyone's raving about it. It's terrible. And it's, you know, it's these ghost hunters or whatever going after goblins, and they really don't know what synchronicities are. The whole thing is about synchronicities, because clearly they're not going to capture goblins, so they have to make it about something. But they don't seem to have a grasp of what synchronicities are, and the proof of the pudding here is that by the end of it, they say the journey is the thing. But with synchronicities are leading you to something, right? So the journey is not the thing. You can't just say, oh, well, no goblins. All these synchronicities are amazing, aren't they? Well, no, not if they led you to nothing, right? Like, am I wrong about this? Jeannot, do you feel like your synchronicities are leading you to something or building you up in some way?
You know, I was actually thinking about this earlier today. At times, it feels like it leads me to nothing because I believe I know it's where I'm going. I believe I understand what's supposed to be accomplished. And then that falters. And then other times I think that maybe what I'm being led to is something that I don't, it's getting me somewhere, but I can't see where that is. So what seems like dead ends is actually progress.
Hmm. Interesting. What about you, Crystal? Do you feel like it's amping up in some way or leading somewhere, these events in your life? I guess they're not necessarily synchronicities, what's going on with you, but do you feel like they're leading somewhere?
I do. I don't know where, but I do feel like there also are some synchronicities in, like, you know, who I told and who I've shared things with and where that's led. Like talking with my brother, then, you know, he has been very, you know, and then, okay, so I listened to several podcasts since then, and he's been doing this for a long time, you know, and he saw a UFO and started to, I was the first, really the one in the family who believed his story and was willing to hear him, but it wasn't until years later that I started to have these other experiences. But in doing so, have also been learning about how there's, in families sometimes, there's experiencers, and some of the synchronicities are connected to other family members, or in being on your show last time, then Christopher emailing me, and each of the links that he put in there or people for me to listen to or to maybe hear what they had to say that I followed, there were commonalities or synchronicities in what happened in my life that just, I think, have led even to being at this round table right now. And I don't know where it's going, but I do feel like more now that the synchronicities are leading somewhere and to some sort of connections and healing and progress.
People of the unsubscribed, that's right, non-subscribers, the time is up. Clearly, this episode has gone on an hour for you, so there must be, like, a lot more left, if I'm giving you an hour. So click that subscribe tab and get a lot. There's a lot more show. In fact, get all of the experience, get all of Dreamland in their entirety, commercial-free. For a pittance. Yes, that's right, a pittance. This ends the weekly series, as I said in the beginning, and now we will go monthly. So, I will see you next month. Take care, everybody, and thanks for listening.